America wakes up to President-elect Donald Trump. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live at 9. Also, make sure to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and the WJCT app. And just ahead, an historic presidential upset as Donald Trump wins the White House over Hillary Clinton. We want your calls at 549-2937 as we talk about the election this morning. At about 9:30, we'll listen live as Hillary Clinton addresses the nation and her loss. Then later, all about this year's Jax by Jax Literary Arts Festival. That's coming up. But first this morning, nearly every poll and pundit gave him little chance to win. But Republican Donald Trump defied the political establishment to win last night's presidential election. Trump breaking through what's typically been called the blue wall of blue-leaning states by not only winning Florida last night, but also traditionally Democratic states like Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and likely Michigan. Republicans did well on the First Coast as well. Here to talk about the results, including the outcome of races and measures on the ballot in Florida, we're joined by A.G. Gankarski from Florida Politics. Thanks for coming in after a late night.
Thanks for having me.
Already getting your calls. What are your reactions to last night's presidential election? It's 549-2937 to join us or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email, tweet the show, or weigh in on our Facebook page. Donald Trump, the first nominee in American history with no government or military experience, claiming his place as America's 45th president. And this morning, many Americans are just waking up to this news. They might have gone to bed before the race was called, AG.
Yeah, and you know what a difference 24 hours makes. If you were looking at Twitter around this time yesterday morning, you're hearing that Hillary Clinton had a 98% chance of winning. You're hearing that it was going to be, you know, a sweep, an epic victory, and so on and so forth. But if you looked at the polling data, the way it was shaking out in places like Ohio, in places like Wisconsin, you know, in places like Michigan, you're seeing a surge going toward Donald Trump away from Hillary Clinton. And, you know, that made a difference. That was something Donald Trump was able to make a sale to those quote-unquote Reagan Democrats. You know, Trump was able to make a sale to, you know, people who didn't benefit from the recovery post-2008, the quantitative easing-driven recovery. And, you know, a lot of unhappy people who, you know, saw their standards of living declining, a la Brexit in England, and, you know, voted for change.
It's 549-2937. Let us know your reactions to last night's election. Donald Trump winning in the Electoral College, although at this time, Hillary Clinton is still ahead by 100,000 votes or less in the popular vote. This is a reminder to Americans of how our system works. You can win the election without winning the popular vote.
Yeah. And, you know, that's the Electoral College. And depending on, you know, the advantage that Trump has, you know, that's what's significant there. If Trump has a huge advantage in the end, then it doesn't matter if you have a faithless elector or two. And, you know, by the time the electors actually vote, you know, you very well may see, you know, Trump is the new normal for the GOP. Paul Ryan's in line. Other Republicans are going to fall in line because, you know, right now they control both, you know, both houses, and they control the presidency. You're going to see a GOP agenda with the most unlikely person up top.
And what about that? Because all through this season of campaigning, Donald Trump very often was at odds with the Republican Party leadership, and many prominent Republicans publicly disavowed him, or at least tried to distance themselves from him, mainly due to remarks he made about Mexicans, immigrants, Muslims, a string of sexual assault allegations, and more. So how now will Donald Trump work in concert with this leadership that had an uneasy embrace from the start?
Well, you know, Trump's already starting the process. He's modulating his rhetoric. He's coming off as a uniter, not a divider, in a speech last night at around 3 in the morning. You know, he sounded magnanimous for the first time in his campaign, you know, talking about Hillary Clinton in positive terms. And, you know, this is really the kind of thing that Trump is going to do. You know, he'll reset. There's a campaign mode, then there's a governance mode. Donald Trump is going to make that shift, and Republicans are going to help him out with that, and even some Democrats, because it's in nobody's interest, you know, to have two divided camps as we have a transition in power.
Here are some of Donald Trump's or President-elect Trump's policy agendas. You mentioned his strong position on trade agreements, rewriting trade deals with other countries, particularly Mexico and Canada, his pledge to bring back domestic jobs in the manufacturing center, a robust infrastructure program. He has pledged to repeal the Affordable Care Act, President Obama's landmark health care law, revoke America's nuclear agreement with Iran, and among other things. Global stock markets plunged at the news that Trump has been elected. But as we look for that to stabilize, which of these policy agendas do you think has the most chance of actually becoming reality? And let's talk, too, about Donald Trump's pledge to build a wall on the Mexican border.
Okay, let's talk about that. I mean, that could be part of the infrastructure plan. If people do look at the wall, a proposal, there's the idea of the virtual wall. This is something that John Rutherford talked about in his successful campaign for Congress. There are ways to do that electronically. You know, the trade deals, that's an interesting thing because, you know, Trump was very anti-TPP, Trans-Pacific Partnership. Left unsaid in U.S. media is that a lot of Asian countries are breaking away from that also. Vietnam's got issues with it. Thailand's got issues. I mean, the TPP was intended to keep these countries in line, and the Asian partners aren't going along with it. You're seeing a China pivot. You're seeing in the Philippines big time. And, you know, this is something where the TPP may not be practicable anyway. So, you know, being against it doesn't mean the same thing that it did 9 months or a year ago. NAFTA renegotiation, I believe that's definitely on the table. I mean, it's 25 years old. There's definitely a time to look at that also. You know, so I think you've got to look at those as the first things. The infrastructure also, that's a big deal. And, you know, this is kind of a difference between the Obama approach, the Clinton approach, and the Trump approach. You know, Obama and presumably Clinton would have been a quantitative easing-driven approach. Inflate the money supply, get that money to the top 1%, and, you know, have them do their stuff. And that's why you've got the spread between rich and poor actually expanding in the last 8 years. You know, Trump, it has said, is going to borrow the money. We'll see what interest rates do, you know, and, you know, as markets recover, as markets recalibrate to a Trump presidency, which nobody was really baking to the cake except for a few people who are looking at trends, looking at the fact that you had, you know, hardcore enthusiasm on Trump's side, and on Clinton's side, no matter how many celebrities from 5 years ago she pulled out, they couldn't quite get the enthusiasm gap filled.
Let's talk about that. Certainly, Trump voters were more motivated, more enthusiastic, in particular, white voters. Your reaction to comments last night that I heard on cable news that this, in some respects, was an American white lash to demographic changes and so forth.
Yeah, I heard that. I believe that was Van Jones on CNN who coined that phrase. And, you know, it's a cute phrase, but, you know, it diminishes what actually drove people to the polls. You know, if you're in one of those upper Midwest places in Wisconsin or Ohio, one of those towns that has 10,000 people, that had 20,000 people a generation ago, but the factory or the mill or whatever, you know, died out and people can't find work, you know, that's Trump's constituency right there. You know, if you're 60 years old and, you know, you're wondering if you're going to have to work at Walmart when you retire and you're seeing your kids doing worse than you, that's Trump's constituency right there. A basket of deplorables is full of people who were driven, you know, this Clinton's phrase, basket of deplorables, not mine, you know, it's full of people who were basically driven, you know, to relative extremism because of economic circumstance. When people find themselves
so
losing.
So you don't agree with the idea that it was both economic anxiety and also racial anxiety?
Well, you know, I think that's a reductive thing. I mean, it's a cute phrase. I get it. But, you know, what you're dealing with is the fact that the 2008 recovery measures didn't work for the former middle class. Yeah, they helped the corporations. Yeah, the car industry is doing great. Yeah, the banks are doing great. But what about the people in these neighborhoods? You know, we see them throughout Jacksonville, like Southside Jacksonville. I mean, you know, those people turned out bigly for Trump. And why? Why? because, you know, they see themselves losing. And, you know, the Obama agenda, the Clinton agenda, the mainstream Republican agenda, such as represented by Mitt Romney 4 years ago, had no address for that. Donald Trump basically channeled the spirit of Pat Buchanan from the 92 and 96 campaigns, the America First message, and said, we're going to turn back the clock and give you your jobs back. And, you know, people are willing to, you know, ante up on change because the status quo was not benefiting them.
Steve, let's go to your calls now as we talk about last night's election. It's 549-2937. Steve is on the South Side this morning. Hey, Steve, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa, AG. I think the 2 cents I'll throw at you is probably about the same 2 cents a lot of your other listeners will also. I am deflated. I am bewildered that the people of the United States would reject somebody that they basically did not like in favor of an unproven, undocumented, inexperienced circus sideshow. I was at the watch party last night down at Cuba Libre, and I saw the signs from the Democratic Party that said things like, equal rights for everybody. Love over hate. And that lost to this vague nonsense about making America great again. I mean, I'm telling you that I have no particular affection for this country I happen to live in right now, when they can elect someone as divisive, as unqualified as this Donald Trump. And by the way, one thing you forgot to put in your prologue is this is also a guy who also has been the only person not to reveal tax returns. And my challenge, I do have a challenge, is that when he doesn't reveal his tax returns and he doesn't build this wall and he doesn't put a whole bunch of coal miners back to work digging coal, I want to know what the true believers are going to say about it. Is it just going to be discounted, or that was we don't care about that anymore? It really wasn't a lie. I am just completely deflated, completely bewildered, and really not in love with my country at this point.
All right, Steve, thanks for the call. Okay, so Steve, speaking for roughly half of the country that doesn't like this result, which is how elections in the modern era have gone. This one, though, in particular, has, as he said, has been a particularly bitter, divisive election.
Yes, it is. And you've got to look at Hillary Clinton, the candidate. I mean, you've got, you know, very much experienced candidate, but a lot of paper on her, too. I mean, you go back 40 years, there's cattle futures. Go back 30 years, there's Whitewater. There's all the stuff that happened during the Clinton administration in the 90s. Then you move forward to, you know, the Benghazi stuff. I mean, you know, there was something for everybody. And if you look at the Clinton Foundation and the interweaving of that with Clinton as Secretary of State, you know, where, you know, especially countries in the Middle East were donating and getting, you know, special treatment. I mean, these are things that people notice because, you know, if you're thinking true blue American, you know, sort of like your, you know, standard target demographic at a Trump rally, and you're saying, okay, well, you know, can Bill Clinton meet with the such and such from Qatar for 5 minutes, get a $1 million check for his birthday? That doesn't sit well. And, you know, Hillary Clinton was disqualified to roughly half the population. You had some third party candidates look viable about, you know, 2 or 3 months ago. Then what happened was
let's talk about the third party candidates in Florida in particular, where the vote total for Libertarian Gary Johnson and Green Party candidate Jill Stein, Clinton supporters noting this morning that if they had not been on the ballot, she might have won Florida. What do you think about that?
Well, you know, people have the right to vote for whomever they want to. That's the beauty of this system. And what happened was when the Clinton machine went after Gary Johnson, you know, magnifying his gaffes into epic mode, like what is Aleppo or East Korea, or, you know, a couple of the other things he said, you know, what happened was the Johnson support did go down, but it broke to Trump. And, you know, that's the irony, because Clinton was disqualified to more than half of the population. You know, that was the problem. She was not getting above 50% in, you know, any polls, really. And, you know, that was a red flag, because if you've got a change election like this was, then you're going to see that. It's kind of, it's analogous to the mayoral race, where you saw, you know, a three-way race in March of 2015. Then after Bill Bishop was out, the Bishop support, by and large, broke to Lenny Curry, because they had already disqualified, you know, Alvin Brown. I mean, you saw it in the state attorney's race locally with Angela Corey. X amount of voters disqualified her, therefore they went to Melissa Nelson knowing nothing. You know, Donald Trump, you know,
he, Melissa Nelson knowing nothing, you mean?
Knowing nothing about her.
Knowing nothing about her.
Right.
Okay. And lots of calls as we talk about last night's election. Let's go to Joel in St. John's. Hi, Joel. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I think Trump went way too far with his rhetoric sometime, but he tapped into something a lot of people were feeling on issues of immigration. People want our laws followed on jobs. I mean, I worked for a company that in the past, you know, 5-6 years has just keep shipping more and more jobs to overseas. And, you know, we see it's a real impact on people here. So, I understand the previous caller's pain when Barack Obama won twice and I didn't vote for him. I wasn't so down on my country. I recognized that the majority of voters felt differently. I agree with some things that Obama did and some things he didn't. I hope people will kind of try to get away from their partisan huddle and really, you know, consider that, you know, we have a new president coming in and give him a shot.
Thanks, Joel. Thank you for that call. Okay, and he talked about jobs at his company and his industry being shipped overseas. Here's a tweet about that from Kathy. The manufacturing industry is not magically going to come back and cure everything. Donald Trump has said he will enact a more protectionist agenda, in part by imposing more strict and high tariffs to goods that are coming in and out of the country. How can Donald Trump make good on this promise to bring back jobs that have gone to other countries?
Well, you know, a lot of the campaign rhetoric is a negotiation posture. Signaling the willingness to impose tariffs is sort of a economic version of Nixon's madman theory from the 60s, which is, you know, I will do what it takes to protect American prerogative. It doesn't mean this stuff is going to be done, as he said, in the campaign trail. It just means that he's willing to, which means that, you know, other countries got to bargain with him, you know, maybe give him more favorable reciprocity on tariff agreements. You know, that's the thing. I mean, you look at something like American ports right now. We're talking about dredging Jack's Port. Well, what's that for? That's for imports. We're not exporting out of that so much as we're importing from, you know, from Asia and from other places. And, you know, it's the thing. If you want to rebuild America in such a way that you're giving dignity and meaningful jobs to, you know, blue-collar people who aren't set up to be business analysts, they aren't going to get their MBAs. You know, they are tradespeople. They are people who work with their hands. Those people deserve gainful employment. And, you know, Trump is, you know, willing to say, well, this is how I'm going to do it. Will it work? Will it won't? I mean, we're going to see what happens in the transitional period.
Let's go to a few more of your calls, and here are a few of your comments on Facebook. Paula writes, I can't believe so many people voted in a monster. How are they going to explain to their daughters, referencing the controversy over Donald Trump's allegations of sexism and even sexual assault. Leilani writes, I have to disagree with your guest disregarding the racial divide when Trump supporters openly brandish the Confederate flag. All right, let's go to your calls. Ricky, downtown Jax. Go ahead, Ricky.
Good morning. My question is, I want to shift to the state race. I want to know about, can you talk about the congressional districts that were picked up, like in Central Florida?
Sure.
Especially the ones being held by John Micah.
Sure.
And talk about it, maybe the Fair District and how that played a role in Democrats picking up a few seats in Florida.
Okay, yeah, thanks for that. Yeah, John Micah losing last night here in our area. John Rutherford and Al Lawson winning districts 4 and 5. And across the state, Democrats had a few pickups, but not many.
Right. I mean, the Stephanie Murphy pickup over John Micah was a big deal. The Democrats really prioritized a lot of outside money, a lot of outside resources, you know, toppling John Mica, the redrawn district and made it more friendly to Murphy, and they picked that up. Moving to this particular area, Al Lawson, John Rutherford won their races. You know, Al Lawson, you know, beat Glo Smith in all but two counties in Congressional District 5, and those are inland rural counties. Al Lawson won Duval County over Glo Smith, and you have to wonder in retrospect, would Glo Smith have been better off if she had embraced Donald Trump rather than running away from the top of the ticket? She was, you know, outspent, she was out fundraised, she had no momentum, and, you know, she was running away from Donald Trump at the end. Looking at Rutherford and Bruderly, no surprise there. You know, John Rutherford had every institutional advantage. He exploited it. Dave Bruderly was not a strong candidate. He did not have money. He did not have backing. You know, it was kind of a sign of the times when President Obama came to UNF. That was actually in Bruderly's district. He wasn't given a speaking slot. Al Lawson was. Barack Obama shares stages with winners or perceived winners, and they were basically punting on that seat. Looking at how Lawson and Rutherford will interface, they're both working across the aisle kind of guys. They both have talked about this in the campaign trail, and they're going to have to learn to work together very quickly in regional priorities for this area.
Lots of calls, emails, and tweets as we talk about last night's election results as Donald Trump defies almost all of the polls to win election over Democrat Hillary Clinton. If you're just waking up, that is the news this morning. A couple of other news and notes around the state. Amendment 1, the solar amendment, went down to defeat last night. Amendment 2, the medical marijuana amendment, passed. It's 549-2937. Conrad is in Arlington. Hi, Conrad. Good morning.
Yeah, I was just thinking about an echoing message here of the little corporal in 1933-34 in Weimar who swept what had been the most powerful nation possibly in the Western world down to their ultimate demise based on democratic socialist nationalism and fueled with xenophobia and eugenics.
You're referring to Nazi Germany?
Mr. Adolf Hitler, yes.
Okay, thanks for the call. We have a tweet about that as well. Nan tweets the show, Trump was endorsed by the KKK. Is that not a reflection on the rise of the alt-right? He is celebrated by domestic terrorists. As we look at these results, an absolutely stunning divide, A.G. Gankarski, between supporters of Trump who, as you say, really responded to his message, his economic message, and also this striking nationalism and populism, and other Americans who are truly afraid of this victory. They see this as an embrace of an ugly underbelly in this country, quite frankly.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that Trump made the decision not to do much in the campaign. He didn't distance himself from the alt-right people. He had neo-Confederate supporters that he just kind of pretended they weren't there. And ultimately, I don't think that was the margin of victory. I mean, the margin of victory, you're not going to win a presidential race with just alt-right neo-Confederate supporters. You're reaching middle America if you're winning in state after state. If the alt-right and neo-Confederates are taking over in these states, then that is a more serious cultural problem. You know, rhetoric likening Trump to Hitler is not responsible, and it misses the point. I think Democrats, especially Democratic operatives, need to look at what happened in this campaign, need to look at where their message didn't hit, need to look at why, you know, their candidate and their candidate slogans and their candidate celebrity surrogates didn't quite get over. And, you know, this is the real question. You're not going to, you know, just reduce it to, you know, just this dualism where you have good versus evil, because it's more complex than that. All political operations are.
We want your calls about last night's victory as we go to Patrick on the West Side. Hi, Patrick. Go ahead.
Doing all right this morning?
Yeah. How about you?
Hello?
Yeah. Go ahead, Patrick. You're on the air.
Okay, yeah, my biggest thing is the reason why Hillary, in my opinion, had lost was with the DNC and their treatment of Bernie Sanders and all of the scandal that went around with that. It's not so much that Trump got more votes than Hillary, it's just that the Sanders supporters didn't come out in the droves that Hillary was banking on. they kind of stuck to their guns, and, you know, a lot of them voted third party as a sign to say that we're not going to put up with any of these shenanigans from the Democratic Party. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Patrick. Okay, what about that? Bernie Sanders supporters who perhaps voted for Johnson or Stein rather than Clinton?
Well, you know, that's an issue. But, you know, if we look at the third party turnout, it wasn't what it was polling at. So I don't know how much that attrition was an issue. I will give you a tidbit from this weekend. I was covering an event with Jesse Jackson and a lot of African-American Jacksonville politicians. I asked Jesse Jackson, are you noticing a depression in enthusiasm for Hillary Clinton compared to Obama in 2008? Jesse Jackson told me there was no such depression, but, you know, the Jacksonville Democrats saw that there was. They saw there was an issue with base turnout. There's a reason that Barack Obama came here a week before the election. There's a reason Jesse Jackson came here. There's a reason Bill Clinton did his bus tour. Because they were scared to death. I mean, that's the reason that they went to Detroit, too. I mean, if a Democratic campaign is going to Detroit, they're seeing something, you know, in the areas where they can't stack votes that they have to counterbalance. And, you know, that's proven to be the case in Michigan.
And for Barack Obama, both in 2008 and 2012, absolutely historic turnout among African Americans, not as high this time around. Hillary Clinton had about the same level of Latino support as Obama had, less support among white voters. So
right.
when you look at the breakdown of the vote, that doesn't cover all of it, but a lot of it.
Right. And, you know, this is the thing. You look at some of the exit polling data, you know, comparing Trump to Romney. Trump was actually down a point with white voters, but was up with minorities compared to Romney. You know, there was some truth to what he was saying that, you know, African-Americans, Hispanics, and so on were listening to him. It wasn't enough of a threshold, but there were some exit polls that had Trump at 10% with African-American voters.
We want your calls as we discuss last night's election results. 549-2937 to join us. Herman in downtown Jacksonville. Hi, Herman. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. I understand that we're up against the clock. I'm going to hit it real quick. I'm still trying to figure out and get information as to who won between Pastor Mark Griffin and Tracy Davis. And as I land the plane, I know AJ likes Kimberly Daniels. Also, was it a mistake for President Obama, I guess, to campaign for the candidate Clinton? And did he also hurt her? And what was the effects of the LGBT community?
Oh, wow. A lot of questions from you. Thanks, Herman. Okay, let's take those one by one.
All right, help me keep those straight.
Let's begin with Tracy Davis. After Reggie Fullwood ran into legal trouble, Tracy Davis, former assistant supervisor of elections, stepping up in that statehouse race to take his place, essentially.
Yeah, Tracy Davis won it by about 20 points against Mark Griffin. They both had money in the campaign. It seemed to be a party ID issue. Yeah, so that was a good win for Tracy Davis. I mean, she finished second in the primary and was a replacement candidate on the ballot. Kim Daniels won easily in her race over Chris Whitfield, basically 2-1 margin. No surprise there. Regarding the Obama-Clinton connection, I mean, you know, what else did Clinton have but to use Obama as much as possible?
Yeah, why not bring in a sitting president?
Yeah,
sure.
I mean, you've got to use that bully pulpit. You know, Obama had his agenda, and you know, Obama was going around campaigning and having, you know, such as in Miami, meetings about his future foundation. So Obama was laying the groundwork for his post presidency also. And as far as the LGBT community goes, this is a tough break for them because
Mike Pence, yeah. The former governor of Indiana, I think it's fair to say hostile, to put it mildly, towards that community, their push for full equality.
He has advocated conversion therapy. You know, Mike Pence is, you know, outside of the mainstream of thought that we typically encounter.
So the question becomes, will a President Trump embrace that agenda, or will he, as other Republican presidents have done on these really hot-button social issues, perhaps give a wink and a nod to the social conservatives in his party without actually following through on their desires when it comes to that issue?
Well, I think you'll see more of a wink and a nod. I mean, you can't roll back marriage equality.
But you could with a different Supreme Court.
You know, perhaps. But I think if Trump were to do that, you know, he'd be reaping unintended consequences that the GOP infrastructure couldn't protect him from. You know, what you might see is, you know, a slowing of progress and other rights and other protections beyond marriage equality. You know, we'll see what happens there. But he's going to have pressure, you know, from the pragmatists and also from the ideologues.
And we're hearing this morning that Hillary Clinton will speak at 10:30 this morning, not 9:30. We will take that news conference when it happens here on 89.9. Meanwhile, let's go to Tim on the West Side. Hi, Tim. How are you? Good morning.
Yeah, I'm doing just fine this morning. I'm calling because, you know, I'm a registered libertarian. I did not think that Gary Johnson was qualified for the job. So, therefore, in my opinion, it left me between two choices. And I am a disabled veteran, and I, no way could I vote for Hillary Clinton because I believe she allowed people to be murdered in Benghazi. I hold her very responsible for that. Now, I can remember back in 2008 when President Obama got elected, the first thing he said to the Republican Party was, "Elections have consequences, guys. I won. Tough luck." That's kind of paraphrasing, but that's what he said. Now, I hope Donald Trump doesn't do that. I hope he does like what his speech said last night. But I'm sick and tired of being called a racist and everything else because I voted for Donald Trump. I had to make a choice. It was a hard choice to make. But, you know, we need to come together. This is all, it's getting stupid. The man won fair and square. Let's give him a chance.
Thanks, Tim.
He's the president-elect.
Thank you, Tim.
Thank you, ma'am.
Yeah, thanks for your call this morning. That was Tim on the West Side. Let's go to Rebecca on the South Side. Go ahead, Rebecca.
Hi. I just wanted to call and say that I'm feeling very disheartened today. I feel like I've lost a lot of my faith in humanity because I feel like Trump winning is hate winning. I feel like he stands for everything that goes against the moral fiber of my being. I feel he stands for racism, bigotry, misogyny, sexism. I've had a lot of my friends tell me not to take it so personally. But as a past victim of sexual assault, I feel like half my country just stood up and told me that what's happened to me and so many other women in their past is something that's okay to joke about. And, I mean, that's not even touching on the racism, the hate, the exclusion, all the rhetoric. And so I just am feeling very disheartened today, and that's what I wanted to share.
Thanks, Rebecca. Two really different points of view just now.
Yeah, and, you know, both callers were very emotional. You had on one hand the first caller, you know, who was, you know, you could hear a lot of grievance in his voice. And, you know, he exemplified the Gary Johnson voter, you know, who decided that, well, Gary Johnson's not it. I've got to choose two of these people. And, you know, I'm choosing the road less traveled. I'm choosing Donald Trump. You know, the second caller, there are a lot of women who feel that way. You know, a lot of women who feel like, you know, this is a referendum on progress that has been made in recent years and recent decades in understanding in gender equity issues. You know, Donald Trump is going to have to address those concerns in a meaningful way. Is he able to do that? That's going to be a test of his presidency.
John at the beaches. Go ahead, John.
Hi. So, yeah, I agree. Definitely some emotion out there about this election. But I think that one of the key themes that the problem in our country is leaving some of these power in the hands of politicians. I know I, for one, work for an organization that long before Barack Obama was president and, you know, long after our next president is gone, we gave rights and recognized the LGBTQ community, women, African Americans. I mean, for the record, I didn't vote for the woman, but I'm frankly indifferent to people's personal choices, and I'd just like to hear your thoughts on that.
All right. Thank you for that, John. Some very insightful calls and interesting calls this morning. Lots of people wanting to really be part of this discussion, which is good. But what about his comment?
Well, I don't really know how to address that particular comment, given the way it was framed. You know, I will say that if you look at take the long view of rights and the evolution of rights being conferred in society, the evolution of understandings of, you know, the fact that there is an LGBT spectrum now. People didn't understand that 30 years ago in the same way. You know, Mike Pence probably still doesn't understand that, but, you know, we're seeing an evolution, and, you know, Donald Trump is going to be swept up in that. He's not just talking to the base anymore. He's not just talking to people at the rallies. He understands that to be a successful president, and he has no choice but to try to be a successful president, you know, he's got to basically bring his message into 2016. Make America Great Again was a campaign slogan. Build a Great Big Beautiful Wall was a campaign slogan. You're going to hear a different Donald Trump, a more measured and more modulated Donald Trump, more like, you know, he was before he decided to court Tea Party support. And, you know, something to watch during his presidency is how he betrays his base, because that's going to happen.
Let's talk about that. People that have watched Donald Trump's business and political career for many years and watched how he changed parties back and forth more than once, for much of the campaign, they didn't take his rhetoric seriously. They didn't think he really believed some of the rhetoric he was talking about. When you say Donald Trump is going to betray his base, how do you mean?
Well, I mean, Donald Trump is not going to be able to deliver on the rally rhetoric, because what he's got to do is he's got to reassure the markets. He's got to work with the divided Congress. He's got to find a way to deal with, you know, the consequences of a jobless recovery about to peter out, or a, you know, recovery that hasn't actually reached people in the middle class about to peter out. I mean, these are real things. So, you know, the idea that, you know, Donald Trump has a tabula rasa to impose rally rhetoric on America, that's not the case. You're going to see him modulate out of necessity. And you're going to see Donald Trump emerge that's more like the guy in 2000 that was saying that Pat Buchanan, whom he stole off his platform from the run-on, was too extreme. You're going to see a Donald Trump emerge that says conciliation and compromise, because ultimately it's negotiation.
And how will that sit with people who firmly want a wall built on the Mexican border? They want Muslims and illegal or undocumented immigrants deported if there's not follow through on those pledges, and also bringing back more good paying jobs, particularly in those Rust Belt states. Then what?
Yeah, I mean, the economic argument is what prevails. If Donald Trump's able to, you know, create jobs and get the economy to grow, you know, and how he does is going to be borrowed money or, you know, printed money one way or the other. You know, that's going to be the measure. People wanted a wall 10 years ago. People wanted a wall 30 years ago. People, you know, were up in arms over Reagan's amnesty of 1986. You know, but by and large, I mean, these issues, they're talking point, hot button issues. But at the end of the day, it's all about economic security. And Donald Trump is going to rise or fall based on, you know, whether or not he can deliver on the economic promise.
Let's go now to Marilyn in Fleming Island. Hi, Marilyn. Thanks for holding you on the air. Good morning.
Hi. Thank you so much. One of the things that keeps rattling around in my brain is, and I'm kind of a current events junkie, so I have been following a lot of the conversations prior to the election, is that the Democrats just have no place at all for someone who is not, who is pro-life. And I am an evangelical Christian college-educated white woman. I've had many discussions with my friends, not just evangelicals, but also Roman Catholics. And so many of these people are single-issue voters, and they just, I think they have voted for Democrats and Hillary Clinton, except they cannot get beyond this pro-life, or if you want to call it pro-choice, on the Democrat side. And I have a real problem with it, too. And so sometimes, you know, there's one thing that's the tipping point, but I feel like the Democrats have just totally no place for this community, even though they really, you know, a lot of these people had real serious moral objections to Donald Trump. And not that I think that the Republicans are going to do so much pro-life, but, you know, they give them a nod and a wink to kind of jerk their strings to get them to vote for them. So I want to know what the thoughts are on this issue, if there's ever been any study done on it
with respect
to the electorate.
Thank you, Marilyn.
Yeah, I mean, the Democrats, you know, made a choice decades ago to move away from, you know, pro-life constituencies. You know, I remember Bob Casey in 1992, he was governor of Pennsylvania, and he spoke at a convention. There was an uproar because he was pro-life, and, you know, the party even then was, you know, pro-choice. What's Donald Trump going to do about it? Probably not much, because
in the grand tradition of other Republican presidents, as she said, who might have given a wink and a nod to the pro-life movement.
Right. I mean, you know, Donald Trump, you know, he discovered cultural conservatism less than 2 years ago. You know, how committed is he to it, really? You know, this is a question that's going to be answered, but, you know, if Ronald Reagan did very little, if George W. Bush did very little, you know, they're expecting Donald Trump to do more and get it through Congress and basically use his political capital to get it through, I'm just not seeing it.
Let's take one more call. It's Terry in San Marco. Go ahead, Terry. You're on the air.
Yes, I just wanted to kind of reinforce some basic principles, and that is that the legislature is what makes our laws. The president's branch enforces them, and the judicial branch interprets them. We still have to watch what our legislature does and always did. And the American people are really good at following TV propaganda and just pointing at each other, blaming each other, and then never reading anything about what laws are being passed that affect their lives. We need to follow the money and follow the money. And we need to understand how much the Kochs spend and what they have done as far as the reinforcing the Department of Energy's need to bring up natural gas, as Putin would as well. So I think that Americans know that Americans are very sick. They're chronically ill, and we have an industry, a market force to keep us chronically ill.
Okay.
We have kids that are drugged.
All right, Terry.
They're drugged in an unprecedented way. I'm just saying that people need to look at the legislature and watch what we do and take care of your kids' air and water.
Thanks for the call. Yeah. We didn't even talk about environmental issues this hour, but thanks for that call. Of course, Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton on completely different pages on the issue of the environment and climate change. But your final thoughts?
My final thoughts are you're going to see an interesting transition. You're going to see Donald Trump playing ball in ways that nobody expected during the campaign. Because, you know, governance is a different thing from campaigning. I know a lot of people listening to this show are very angry right now, very scared. You know, I've heard the gamut of emotions. But, you know, in reality, you've got a transition happening, and it's in America's interest to have that be a smooth transition. And it's in Donald Trump's interest to make sure that happens. So expect some conciliation, some accommodationism from Trump that nobody predicted before yesterday.
Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
He's A.G. Gankarski of Florida Politics. And in a moment, Jax by Jax. We'll tell you about that right after this.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, morning after analysis of the 2016 presidential election, plus what exit polls and results by region suggest about priorities and challenges for the next administration. At 10 o'clock on 89.9 WJZT, your community, your world.
WJCT and ViStar Credit Union are honoring the memory of Fred Rogers with Mr. Rogers Sweater Drive. The drive runs through November 30th and accepts new and gently used sweaters, jackets, and blankets. Contributions may be dropped at WJCT and all ViStar Credit Union locations and two men in a truck at 8849 Arlington Expressway. For more information, log on to WJCT.org. Contributions will be donated to selected nonprofit facilities within the First Coast area.
Welcome back. Well, finally, this hour, we're going to turn away from politics for a moment and tell you about Jax by Jax. The Jax by Jax Literary Arts Festival in the Cork Arts District is growing this year with 25 featured writers, a student showcase, a party. There's even going to be a monthly Jax by Jax reading series. It's all coming up this weekend. Right now, we welcome founder Tim Gilmore and author and writer and poet Andy Rojas. Good morning, guys. Thanks for being with us.
Morning, Melissa.
Tim, let's begin with you. First of all, you write a new book just about every other month, it seems. So it's no surprise that you would start a writer's festival. Tell us about Jacks by Jacks.
So this is our third year, and the idea all along has been to let Jacksonville hear its own literary voice. I think writers have a really important role in any culture, any community that they are in, and there's a lot of stuff happening in Jacksonville, and I grew up here. And the decentralization of the city before social media meant a lot of times that people didn't know, they knew what they were doing, but they didn't know a lot of other people were doing what they were doing.
Right. So this is a way to bring everyone together.
Yes.
This is coming up Saturday, 3 o'clock at Park and King Streets. What else on the agenda?
Right. 2 o'clock, we have for the first time a student showcase that's going to be at Il Desco Italian Restaurant, right at the corner of Park and King. We have 9 students who are going to read from FSCJ, UNF, I believe. I'm not sure that we have a student from JU as well. And then after that, from 3 to 6 is the main event. There are, as you said, 25 writers and 12 local venues. We're using, businesses in the area are so kind as to let us use their space as venues, and then an after party at 6:30 down at Cork.
And so, Andy Ross, what does this mean for local writers?
Yes, I think my favorite part of it is seeing the young people come up, high school students, college students. And to me, I think it means showing people that it can happen in Jacksonville. You don't have to be in New York. You don't have to be in L.A. You can write your own story right here. And if we can do it, you can do it too.
Everybody and that's can. What you've been doing, right?
That's what I tried to do. I think of writing as wrestling an angel. It's like you,
really?
You think you figure it out, and the next time around, the angel has new tricks, and you have to figure it all over again. So
it's hard to be a writer. It's a lonely thing. Tim Gilmore, you've written quite a few books, as I said. This is a way for you to support other writers, and they need that support, I guess.
Yeah, that's true. It can be a very lonely thing. Of course, writers can, our personalities are as varied as anybody else, but a lot of writers tend to, for me, my ideal time is kind of going back into my own cave and, putting my dreams up on the walls of that cave and then writing them down. And that's where I'm, most mm-hmm. myself. So organizing and promoting is not natural, we need that, writers need that. And I think Jacksonville needs that.
Now, as Andy said, this is something too that I think is one example out of many we could point to. Another one is the Art Republic Festival coming up next weekend. Jacksonville's sort of arts and culture scene has grown by leaps and bounds over the last few years. How much are you trying to be part of that?
Well, yeah, that's true. And I was thinking in relation to the elections, Percy Bysshe Shelley, the poet who was the husband of Mary Shelley, who wrote Frankenstein, in 1821, he wrote that poets were the unacknowledged legislators of the world. And that might be a little, exaggerated, but I think that arts and artists have a real responsibility to speak back to the culture and do what they can to move the culture forward. And we have a strong art scene here.
Andy, do you agree?
Oh, absolutely. I think somebody else, and I can't remember who said, he said, we read to know that we're not alone. And I think going back to what Tim was saying, this is all about community. It's about bringing people together, coming together. When you read a Harry Potter book, you are now part of a Harry Potter community. You're a part of a readership.
That's true.
You're part of something so much bigger than you are.
And go ahead.
No, that was it. And then.
And this Saturday, when people come out, they don't have to be a writer to be part of this.
Not at all. In fact, I've told people that if you come out and you don't have a good time, I'll mow your lawn. You know,
it's a nice promise.
And also, I mean, this is not, you know, the way Jax by Jax is set up, it's not about going and listening to 2 hour long lectures or anything. The writers perform for about 15 minutes in all of these different venues, and you can go from, you know, one place to the next place to the next place. You can walk from Jacksville Magazine offices down to Riverside Liquors or Beer 30 or Cool Moose Cafe or True Blue Hair Salon. It's all right there. So the city is the stage. And, you know, I think anybody who likes stories, and that's all of us, should come out.
It's Jax by Jax, the Literary Arts Festival. It's coming up this Saturday in Riverside from 3 to 6 o'clock in the afternoon at Park and King Streets. Founder Tim Gilmore, writer Andy Rojas. Have fun. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much.
That's our show today. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Merchart. Michelle Corum runs the board. The show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a show. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and our WJCT app. And next on Diane Rehm, morning after analysis of the 2016 presidential election results. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.